Welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Jessica Plotkin-Sell on the board in for Calvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, you can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Very excited to be joined by our next guest. It is Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and he is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Darren Von Ruden. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for joining us, Darren. We really wanted to talk about this. I saw this article. You had spoken to WPR about the lack of a farm bill, and we're not anywhere closer to a farm bill than we were 6 months ago, are we?
No, we're not. Certainly with the election process going on right now, our elected officials in Washington, D.C. that are supposed to be doing their job are really not doing their job. There's been enough discussion over the years that, you know, we should be able to get it to the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate and get it to the president's desk for signature a little bit faster than what we are. In decades past, it seems like the Farm Bill has not been as bipartisan as it is today. There's been a lot of work across the aisles to make it happen when it needs to happen. But the political atmosphere that we're in today is making things much more difficult.
Darren, one of the things that, you know, is made very clear in that article is, you know, I think if you ask most Americans who know nothing or don't work on farms, they think it's the farm bill. So they're going to be talking about farm subsidies and farmer type things, and they'll make their accusations and whatever. But the farm bill is far bigger and more encompassing than we even know. It includes a lot of programs. Can you speak on that, please?
Yeah, sure. Certainly, you know, the nutrition title is the biggest part of the Farm Bill, and that includes your school lunch programs, your daycare center programs, your institutional programs that provide food, and of course, then there's the food stamp part of that process too. But, you know, it really affects a larger chunk of the American public than we want to think it does. Certainly, you know, the majority of the titles are dealing with farm commodities, insurance programs for crops and things like that. But the biggest chunk of the money actually goes to making sure that those food items are in the, you know, the schools, the childcare centers, things like that.
And we spoke with Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, Darren, a couple of weeks ago. And we were talking about this as well. And I asked her, I said, are farmers resentful of these nutritional assistance programs? And she said, no.
Yeah, you know, and I think there's quite a few farmers that actually have been closely touched by that because of the economy on most farms and smaller farms, especially. You know, there isn't a lot of money there, so they probably use the WIC program. They probably use the reduced school lunch programs, and then certainly, you know, sometimes might even have to depend on those food assistance programs that are there as part of the farm bill. So, you know, I think the vast majority of farmers certainly are not. You know, as rural America is changing because we're seeing more and more folks that don't work on farms living in rural America, that dynamic changes because we're just interviewing more people that aren't necessarily farmers themselves.
In the article, sir, it was made very clear that we were supposed to have a farm bill last year. And then they said, farm bill next year, which is now 2024. And as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot going on. I mean, the election alone is enough to stop a lot of things, and not to mention the fact that Congress isn't even in Congress right now. You, as the president of the Farmers Union of Wisconsin, what are your steps then next to, is it flying to Washington, meeting with representatives, talking to people, like, you know, that you've got a vested interest. This is important to have. And as you just said, it involves all of us. What are your steps that you need to do to try to get this done and not just kick down the lane for another 6 months to a year?
Yeah, so, you know, right now, as you said, they're not in session, so they're back in their districts. And, you know, we've got members that are meeting with our elected officials throughout the state, you know, when they're back home here, trying to persuade them to do what's right with that program. And so certainly you don't have to be a farmer to do it. You know, anybody that eats food really should be concerned about the farm bill, because it ultimately affects you know, what the pay prices are that farmers receive, which keeps them in business, but it also does affect what that overall price for the food that we eat is too. So, you know, that can happen in September when they come back in session. A lot of the farm groups are going to be doing some fly-in type activities where we'll go to DC and actually meet with them in their offices. And I would imagine the farm bill is probably going to be the, you know, number one item that most of the farm groups are talking about, because if we can't get them to move it through the proper procedures to get it to the president, get signed, we certainly need to look at an extension, because there's a lot of dollars that are in line that will go through the appropriations process. And if that isn't completed, you know, we could look at huge amounts of reduction in farm bill expenditures next year then.
If you're just joining us, Darren Von Rudin is our guest. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It is Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and we're talking about the languishing farm bill that, for whatever reason, they just can't seem to get any work done on it. I can't imagine how frustrating it is, Darren, for your members when they do talk to their to our lawmakers about why they can't seem to get this done. What kind of excuses do they provide?
Well, mainly it's the other side's fault. So just depending on which office you're in, you know, it's either the Democrats' fault or else it's
lovely.
The Republicans' fault. And so, you know, it's not taking the responsibility for their own actions.
Right.
And as a farmer and farm communities that have that good work ethic, when the cows need to milk, when the calf pens need to be cleaned or the barnyards need to be cleaned off, we go at it and we get it done. And yeah. So, you know, we're expecting that same atmosphere from our elected officials, but certainly have not been seeing it.
I can't imagine the level of frustration, as you pointed out, Darren, the amount of work that farmers do and the dedication and perseverance it requires. And then you go visit somebody in their big fancy schmancy office, and for whatever reason, they just can't seem to get anything done.
It's real frustrating. I know, we'll have a few good meetings every year that kind of we can focus on that. Hey, maybe if they can just get going, something we can do, we can have a good year end here. But then you always think about the offices where, you know, that nothing's going to happen coming out of that office. And that's just a real frustration that we, you know, as Americans, we shouldn't have to deal with that, because we have the ability to get stuff done if we really want to. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we need to look at that in the election box. You know, if our elected officials are not doing their jobs, we should try to find somebody else.
Yep. Time to go.
Yeah.
Time to go.
And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the show. And, you know, Pat talks to Hans Breitenmoser, and as Jane mentioned, Pam Jahnke, is that you have all these politicians of both sides of the aisle who stand on a podium in front of a cornfield and say how important the farmer is to America, and really they have their jacket off and their tie undone and they're with the people, and then they get in their car, get back in the plane, go to Washington, and they don't help the people who, I mean, the backbone of our is agriculture. And I don't even know how you square with that. And I think you honestly, Darren, I think you answered the question already, or my frustration, which is, at the end of the day, you got to get up, put your boots on, go work, and do it again.
And get it
done. That's what you need to do. And it's so admirable. And that's why we want to highlight voices like yours, because those politicians love to tell you how great you are, but folks, they're not getting those things done. And those things affect you as well, not just the farmers.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit, Darren, about the dairy revitalization plan. What would that do?
So what we're looking at there is that would actually help, you know, equalize the whole dairy program. You know, currently the federal milk marketing orders are being reexamined, and there's quite a bit of talk, or what's going to happen most likely is that processors are probably going to get a larger make allowance. So that means that there's going to be more dollars that the consumer are paying that will go to the processors, but the farmers ultimately in the end are going to be receiving less for that 100 pounds of milk that we produce. And we've seen it every time that make allowances go up, farmers receive a smaller share of the consumer dollar. You know, for instance, back in the 80s, dairy farmers are receiving about 45 cents of every dollar that the consumer is spending. Today, we're only between 15 and 16 cents of that consumer dollar.
Oh, my God. That's a crime. That's criminal.
How do they
Darren?
Justify such a drastic cut with everything, with prices raising over the past decades? How do they square like a 50% cut almost?
Well, it's more than 50% actually. So, you know, going from 45 down to 15, it's more like a 68% or 66% cut, something like that. But, you know, they justify it by saying that it's the stockholders and they got to make sure that they can continue to make sure that the stockholders are, you know, making that 15-20% profit. Meanwhile, we're seeing, you know, a farm and a half go out of business in the state of Wisconsin here every day. And, you know, ultimately it's going to come back to bite us, because when we get down to having one or two individuals or companies owning all the food production in this country, we are going to be in trouble.
Yes, absolutely. That is a that is a terrible future. It really is. Could you have time to stay with us for a second segment, Darren?
I can, yes.
That would be great. And Tom is on the line. He has a question for you about the Farm Bill. We will take that when we return. We are talking to Darren Von Ruden. He is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and it's Farm Worker Appreciation Day. We're talking about the languishing Farm Bill, why it's important, and why our lawmakers, I don't know, like to should do it, do something.
Do something.
Do something. Do a job, maybe. Yeah. All right, stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach. We have Jess on the board in for Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us, you can call, you can text at 855-752-4842 or leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, where our guest is Darren Van Ruden. Darren Von Ruden, I apologize. The president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It's Farm Worker Appreciation Day, and we're talking about the Farm Bill, which continues to sit without anything getting done on it in Washington. Tom from LA has been very patient with a question about the Farm Bill. Good morning, Tom. What did you want to ask?
Yeah, Derek, I have a quick question for you. I wanted to ask you, it's actually two questions, but one is how many family farms have disappeared because of CAFOs? And the second one is, isn't the Farm Bill also included with SNAP benefits or food assistance or otherwise known as food stamps for people, which do get 60 cents back on the dollar on the return on investment? A lot of people don't realize that, and I don't know if I'm being correct on that, so I wanted to be fact-checked on that myself.
Okay, Tom, thank you. Darren, can you respond to that?
Yeah, certainly, you know, with the first one, you know, just depending on when we go back to farm numbers, if you look at really when farms started getting larger and larger in the state and across the country was sometime in the early 80s or maybe even the 70s, we had well over 160,000 dairy farms across the country at that point in time. We're down under 30,000 dairy farms right now. So you could really say 130,000 farms have really been run out of business because of the monopolization that's going on in the dairy industry. The other question about the 66% of this new food stamp dollars, I'm not sure what that number is neither, so I won't comment on
sure,
that one.
Sure, that's fine. I hope that answers your questions, Tom. Thank you, Darren. That is a big concern, certainly the number of farms that we're losing. And you talked about this. It just seems like there's this constant encouragement to get bigger. I mean, Sonny Perdue in the previous administration, didn't he say something like, go big or go home?
Yeah, that was actually said at the World Dairy Expo back in 2019 or maybe 2018, one of those 2 years that when he was there to, welcome the folks from around the world to the World Dairy Expo. But the real question there too is looking at the food prices that we're paying today. And if these, large farms are going to make the system more efficient, why are we paying 2 to 3 times as much for dairy products today as what we were in 2020 or 2000, I should say, those efficiencies, they should be keeping the price to the consumer down, and that just isn't happening. So, at some point in time, we really got to look at what's going on there. And it's really the redistribution of dollars into fewer and fewer hands. So, we've got more and more people that are just working and not being able to realize that American dream of owning something. They're just the worker there that gets the job done and most of the time aren't getting paid what they should be getting paid for the work that they do.
I just can't imagine you saying the World Dairy Expo, a gentleman standing on stage and making that sentiment. I'm sure there are people there who are going to clap their hands and be like, yes, we are on board. But I imagine a lot of the farmers that are there, like, this is not the message.
That's not, continuing to grow, it cannot be ideal for everyone.
Right. If all 130 dairy farmers that have went out of business in the last 2 to 3 decades, we're all getting to be 10,000 cow dairy operations. For one thing, there is enough animals out there for that. But then, we'd be at $0 per hundredweight instead of the 16, 17 that we are.
Yeah.
Because we just have way too much product then at that time. So, and that's part of what we're trying to do with the dairy revitalization plan too, is get a balance so that we can make sure that there's a safe, adequate supply of dairy products for the consumer out there, but also making sure that we have multiples of farmers that are providing that product versus getting down to fewer and fewer.
And I may be off base here, Darren, but I would think as well that it is, depending upon the conditions where they're kept, it's got to be a little bit better for the cows to be in smaller operations.
Well, certainly, looking at our operation, we are organic too. So we pasture our cows throughout the, pasturing season, which is really the end of April through maybe the end of October into November, just depending on the Wisconsin climate here. It seems like they're more comfortable out in that lush green pasture. A lot of the newer, bigger operations have went with sand bedding, which is, comfortable too. Certainly looking at all the people that lay on beaches around the countryside, it's a comfortable place to lay, but they're also walking on concrete all the time when they're going to get their feed and get milked. And with that sand between your feet and the concrete too, it certainly causes some issues. But looking at the overall process, certainly are some conveniences and comforts with some of the modern facilities. But you also have to look at the whole process, and not everything is comfortable there.
You mentioned the season for having the cows out there. How is farming being affected now by the climate change, as well as if it is severe, does the Farm Bill have things in there to help the farmer essentially?
Like conservation-wise.
Yep. Certainly conservation programs are, a huge thing that we need to see more dollars put into. Currently the House version is wanting to take some of those dollars that have been added through the Inflation Reduction Act. They want to take those dollars and put them into other avenues of the Farm Bill, which isn't right. We have conservation folks that are farmers that want to be a part of conservation programs but can't because there's not funding. So it doesn't make sense to take funding away from programs that need more money. And, you know, just looking at climate change, yes, you know, with the storms that we had again last night here in western Wisconsin and southern Wisconsin, you know, the corn and soybeans from the hilltop to the bottom of the hill, you know, we see gullies all the time here in our neck of the woods because of those storms. And, you know, when we had dairy farms around, there was every third strip or even every other strip was a alfalfa strip, which kept more soil in place. And, you know, looking at what's happening now, certainly no-till is preventing a little bit of that, but not all of it. So, you know, we just need to get back to some of those good conservation programs that were really started back in the 1930s here in western Wisconsin that kept tons and tons of soil in place that are now being lost because we think we need to farm from fence row to fence row, when in reality, this country throws about 40% of our food supply away on a yearly basis. So we could actually, you know, take some land out of production and still feed the world if we, or feed the country at least anyway, if we use smart common sense practices that allowed people to not only produce, but also have that safe food supply and an adequate food supply too.
Darren Von Ruden is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We are out of time, Darren. We would love to have you back. There's so much more to talk about. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so very much.
Yep. Thank you, Jane and Greg.
News is coming up next, and then when we return, the best justice money can buy. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was walking down the high street.
This is such a
weird
song.
When I heard footsteps behind me, and there was a little old man.
I just can't about this. I mean,
chuckling away. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Jess on the board, bringing the bumper music today.
For those people who are like, that sounds weirdly like David Bowie, you'd be correct.
That is David, early David Bowie.
I don't think he was ever David Jones when he was releasing albums, but this is like, I think his first song. Like first
The Laughing
single.
Gnome.
The Laughing, but and as I said to you and Jess before the show, it's like, back in England when everyone had to sing like this.
Right.
My name is David Bowie and
we're
I'm
all
laughing.
From London.
We're all from London, Governor.
We're doing, Jess decided to select happy bumper music today.
Yeah. And I love
kind David. Of a nice change of tone.
Yeah.
As you would from a... say the Trump Vance campaign to the Harris Walls campaign, slightly different tones I'm feeling from the two campaigns.
Well, I could definitely find some hate songs. I mean,
as opposed to the Trump Vance team sending out a fundraising email this morning saying, Tim Walls hates you.
Yeah.
Give us money.
They sent another one that was titled, let's see here. I found it. It was, Tim Walls will unleash hell on earth.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
He's the guy that's going to unleash hell on earth.
I don't even think Donald Trump can unleash hell on earth. That's just a bit hyperbolic, I must say. But
from about Tim Walls? Yeah, I would agree. We did want to thank, again, our last guest, Darren Van Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union.
Yeah.
Talking about the languishing farm bill, and it is just sitting there and continues to get kicked down the road. It was supposed to have been passed last year, and now they have to get it passed by the end of September.
Well, they can do an extension, but that's
or
just,
they can do an extension.
But that's just honestly, that's nothing more like than with a budget and continuing resolutions and whatnot. It's kicking the can down the road, and really just, in my opinion, and I don't like saying it in front of when we have farmers on because I don't, my platitudes don't do anything, but it's just disrespectful just disrespectful. And I don't disagree that we have politicians on both sides who are guilty of this.
Oh yes.
But I'm sorry. And I wanted to wait until he was gone because it's a precarious situation. I don't want him to comment on it. But the representative from Wisconsin from the 3rd district sits on the Ag Committee.
Yes.
And he routinely brags about it, how he's the only person from Wisconsin who's on the Ag Committee.
Yep.
Derek Van Orten, what have you done for the farmers of the state? Instead of taking pictures standing next to barns and combines, what have you done for the farmers of this state? I'll wait for an answer.
Absolutely.
It makes me so angry.
And I think, and I would think that many Wisconsin farmers are angry about that too. But as you pointed out, it's not just one side that sits on things and don't do things.
Absolutely.
But I do think that this is a pretty, Derek Van Orten is a pretty egregious example. And again, don't tout your love for our farmers and then let them swing in the wind, because I don't think that's a very good idea. And I also think, and that's one of the reasons why I want to have Darren back, I think there is this misunderstanding that all farmers are like against conservation.
Ugh.
That's not even remotely accurate. They see it firsthand, as Darren was saying. We see the changes with the heavy rains, mm-hmm. and what's happening. And so I think there's a lot more support among Wisconsin farmers and just farmers in general for conservation.
Yeah,
they know climate change. They see it every day.
I think I'm assuming, this is what my assumption is, when it comes from a farmer's standpoint, it has to be part of like it's part of our business model. We need the land to do our business.
Right.
I can't farm in an office.
And so, I can't farm if my land is poisoned.
That sounds like you're just not trying hard enough.
Thank you very much. You're right. I am lazy. I am full. I will unleash hell on earth and everyone. I hate you. So it's incumbent upon them for them to be at least symbiotically in support of conservation to preserve their land.
Absolutely.
But beyond that, a lot of them are hunters, fishers, hikers, skiers.
Yes.
Have their own little spot up north or down south or whatnot. So, yeah, it is absolutely a testament to the failing of our government to them. But I think about this more than I should. But the fact that Derek Van Orten sits on the Ag Committee and is not saying, at least, I mean, God, if he was at least tweeting, hey, we need to get this in order. This is Wisconsin farmers I'm responsible for. But nothing.
No, he's out there bullying little girls.
Yeah.
Because that's apparently what he's really, really good at.
He's yelling at kids and he's, oh my God, that interview too we played last week where he's just so disrespectful to journalists. They don't need my anger. I'm sure they're angry enough. They've got generations of anger. But like the fact that they're making 68% less.
It's just criminal. It is. It's just criminal. Anne from Chippewa Falls listening on here on WAUK texting in, yay for organic small farms, because that's what Darren had mentioned his mm-hmm. is. That's a real farmer who cares about what we ingest. It's corporate greed with these huge farms. They hurt our environment as well.
Yeah.
And I think our farmers are well aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why like I could listen to farmers talk all day long, and I was happy to have them on the show.
Before we get to the best justice that money can buy, this just came across my Twitter feed. Tim Walz, of course, the newly selected vice presidential nominee on the Kamala Harris ticket. Tim Walz putting on Twitter, the best part of being the VP candidate for the Dems is that my running mate will never try to have me hung by a crowd of her own supporters.
I'm sorry, but
oh boy,
this is one place where I'll step in and say, no, thank you, Tim Walz. That is bad grammar. It's hanged.
Oh, well, we'll let this one slide.
I'm done. I'm voting for Trump now.
He has the best grammar.
Good grammar or nothing. But yeah, oh my gosh. See, and that is what I appreciate as not just an American, as a voter, but as a comedian. When you find these politicians who are just so funny and they're and just
genuine
and can come up with a good zinger. Midwesterners have good zingers. we're stuck inside being cold a lot of the time, so we got to think of something. But that is a great one, and
so funny.
I just love it. Yeah. Oh, welcome to the game, Mr. Walls.
Yes, absolutely. Archie from Middleton, thank you for your patience, Archie. I see that you are disappointed in the Kamala Harris's selection of Tim Walls.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm going to vote down ballot blue irregardless, to be honest, because we need to defeat Trump. But I feel like Governor Shapiro, the way that he is able to be so charismatic, be so powerful in his speeches and things like that. It's, you know, a lot of people called him the White Obama, basically. Like, I don't know if that's appropriate to say, but that's what they call them. And I really do agree with him because, like, obviously Obama could bring out very large crowds. I think that he would have been viewed a little bit more centrist than what Waltz is. And now we're going to have, you know, the independents that may be like, well, maybe they're a little bit, they're all too liberal, things like that. So I just think that Shapiro would have evened out Kamala Harris a little bit better than Waltz does.
I appreciate that, Archie. Thank you so much. And we really appreciate you listening and for calling in. I thought all of them were good. I thought we had just a wealth of choices. Mark Kelly, I thought was great. Andy Beshear from Kentucky, I thought had a lot of possibilities. Josh Shapiro. But I don't know, just seeing the reaction from the right on how they're going to attack this gives me joy. it just
makes me smile.
It makes me smile. And again, they're going to have to, I mean, they're going to, he's already, what, he's going to unleash hell and he hates you.
Yeah.
And they're certainly not going to soften their message, and they wouldn't have done it with Shapiro. You know, they would go after Shapiro too for any number of things.
I think that Shapiro, I understand Archie's sentiment with this matter, and I enjoy Josh Shapiro, but I think what we were finding out was that he was coming with some baggage as well. There were questions on vouchers. There was questions. They were being raised by liberals.
Well, but
by Democrats.
To Archie's point, though, yeah. I think that the whole voucher thing is where he sees him as a little bit more centrist. I don't know Waltz's position on that. Again, this is pretty new.
As far as I know,
no to vouchers.
No to vouchers for Tim Walls.
Correct.
Yeah, no to vouchers.
Oh, because he was a public school teacher.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, I just think that Tim Walls is bringing, I don't know. I mean, they all would have brought their own thing. They all would have brought their own vibe. Josh Shapiro is slick and cool and fun, and he's Obama-esque. And someone tried to say, "Oh, you're the poor man's Obama." He's like, "That's a compliment."
Seriously.
But I don't know. For me, my money, Tim Walls. He is a brick wall of good.
And let's not forget, everybody, that he won Minnesota's congressional delegation hot dish cook-off 3 times with his turkey trot tater tot hot dish. So we got that going for us. I'm very excited about
what,
that.
Is there a recipe available for that? Because I would love
I'm sure we can find it.
We'll make it a
election. The name of that is joyful.
I know, right?
You can sing it to the laughing gnome, the turkey tot hot dish.
And Carol Horning on the live stream says, Jess, oh my God, laughing gnome, you just made my morning. So well done. Good pick. All right. Let's shift gears over to the best justice that money can buy. Boy, oh boy, Clarence Thomas, busy, busy guy. Justice Thomas once again did not publicly disclose additional private travel provided to him by his rich, rich, rich friend Harlan Crowe. Customs and Border records show that Clarence Thomas and wife Ginny took a round trip between Hawaii and New Zealand in 2010 on Mr. Crowe's private jet, as one does. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, writing to Mr. Crowe's lawyer demanding he give more information about their financial relationships. Of course, Clarence Thomas was supposed to list this on a financial disclosure form. They do this every year.
He doesn't.
They're supposed to do this every year.
Yeah, he doesn't. And then he does, and then he's, oh.
Whoopsie.
That one too? And you and I were trying to crunch the numbers.
Yes.
On how much that would cost.
And, just for the flight.
And you were asking me questions like, you know, just the flight from the time. And we're like, oh, it'll probably cost about $72,000 to charter a plane from A to B.
From Hawaii to New Zealand.
But then when you told me what it was about and you gave me the context of it, I was like, oh, if that's Harlan Crowe's plane, that's going to be like a $100,000 flight because he's probably got the best plane with the best gas, the best pilots. It uses the best air. But don't worry, folks. Don't worry. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach here to tell you, don't worry. That money didn't come out of your taxpayer pockets.
Right. Or influence any decisions that might have affected taxpayers' pockets.
That's where I was going with the joke. No, seriously, though. Instead of us paying for what happens all the time, we see politicians flying on our dime all the time. This time it was bought and sold, paid for by Mr. Harlan Crow, who literally owns a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. And there's a fascinating Substack by Greg O'Lear that I stumbled upon, and we'll put this in the show notes after the show is over, just talking about where Clarence Thomas came from, because he did not come from money.
Mm-hmm.
When he was appointed to the court in 91, he was 43. He had already spent most of his adult life working for the government. When he was appointed at that time, he still had student loans.
Yes, I remember that. And that's a part of an American story that's like should bring you empathy towards other people, but nope.
Well, and then he went and said, you know, guys, I can make a whole lot of money, more money someplace else. And that's when all these deals started coming in, like book deals for $1.5 million. Ginny Thomas working for Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society. And what are they doing with all this money now? They don't have kids. It's just an interesting, interesting article. We will put that in our show notes. Go to civicmedia.us. Click on Mattenair on Air. Give Greg about 45 minutes to get that up. And you can read it for yourself. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. All right. We have some unbearable news about Bob Kennedy Jr. We promised you that is coming up next. Stay close. You're listening to Mattenair on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Earning me lots of money writing comedy prose for radio shows. It's the gnome service, of course.
Welcome back to Mattenair on Air. Jane Mattenair, Greg Bach, the wonderful Jess, filling in for Calvin on the board. Coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha, you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Want to thank Jess for stepping in for Calvin the last couple of days. It's been a lot of fun, Jess. Thank you very much. You've done a great job.
Been having fun. Thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely. We're going to get to some unbearable news about Bob Kennedy Jr., but I did want to share a couple of comments. We were talking about Clarence Thomas's latest. Whoops. I forgot again to write down a very expensive trip for my really, 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 really rich friend who may or may not have cases coming in front of the Supreme Court, but
it happens.
It's nothing. It's just nothing. I love this comment from Tony on the live stream. He says, Clarence Thomas doesn't have kids. Is he even committed to the future of this country? Thank you, Tony.
He better, because he's deciding those futures.
Just like all those childless ladies out there who have no commitment to this country.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Glenn Grothman or Lindsey Graham.
No.
Never mind. Sorry, wrong. Oops.
We were also talking about Tim Walz being selected as Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate. Jack from Merrimack, Harrison Walz will release hell on earth. That's what the Trump campaign is saying now. I can't imagine a much worse hell on earth than ignoring a pandemic and promoting multiple useless cures, causing literally hundreds of thousands of unnecessary deaths. I personally had two friends die, probably because people around them didn't get vaccinated or wear masks.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about your loss.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
terrible. That's tragic. I go back to the place I was working before. I did more stories trying to get people not to poison themselves by taking hydroxychloroquine or horse dewormers or injecting bleach.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked to poison control and said, yeah, guys, no, don't try. Nah, no, just no.
But what do you know, Jane? Those are just experts in their field.
I would talk to the experts.
No, no, thank you.
Field.
No, thank you.
I didn't get it from my cousin's friend's cousin's.
So you didn't do your own research.
I didn't do my own research. I know. What a silly, silly woman.
What a patriot.
Vicky from St. Paul. Good morning, Vicky from St. Paul, listening in Madison on WMDX. Speaking of Minnesota, if Kamala and Tim Walz win, now Minnesota would have a Native American woman for governor.
Yeah.
Penny Flaggett. Peggy.
It's Peggy or Penny?
I believe it's Peggy. And she's Ojibwe, which is great.
That's
that would be so cool. That would really be cool. All right, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I do think it's worth mentioning. Bob Kennedy Jr. We like to call him Bob.
Bob Jr. He's kind of, the Kennedy name shouldn't be attached anymore.
Well, if you're still considering voting for him.
Oh, boy.
I do think that there's just a few little details that have come out that you need to know about. Granted, this happened in 2014, but this is a really bizarre, truly bizarre story.
Yeah.
So Robert Kennedy Jr. in 2014 was going falconing.
Falconry.
As one does.
Yeah.
And as he was driving back, he saw the carcass of a bear cub that had been hit by a car. So he pulled over and picked it up and put it in his car, took some photos with it.
As one does.
Sticking his fingers into the mouth of this deceased bear with blood. And he's, you know, ha, ha, ha. Keep in mind, Robert Kennedy Jr. was 60 years old. At the time.
Yeah.
60 years old. I can see some 22-year-old knucklehead doing something like that. I'm 64. I shouldn't be surprised. I see what people my age are like.
But Jane, that's where the story ends, right?
No, it actually goes on. Initially, he apparently planned to take it home and skin it and then save the meat to eat. Because, of course, everybody wants to have roadkill that's been sitting out there for God knows how long, but you won't get vaccinated because that's not safe. But instead, apparently that was going to be too problematic with dealing with this dead bear. So he decided to drive to Central Park in New York City. And I guess he had an old bicycle in the back seat too. And he set it up to look like the bear had been hit by a bicycle and that's what killed it.
He thought that was hilarious.
He thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
Now, that story, on top of, I encourage anyone who has Max or YouTube, you can find this on YouTube, John Oliver, Last Week Tonight, I'm a huge fan of the show.
Me too.
They covered RFK Jr. this past Sunday, and they went deep into it. His policies, his beliefs, falconry.
His history.
And this whole thing reminds me of a call we got months ago from somebody who was upset with us because we were talking more on the conspiracy theory side of it all. And they were right to call him with their concerns. And we said, all right, well, let's look at his policies. And I looked at the policies on his website and there were some decent ones, but also it's a website. Anything look good on a website. You can say whatever you want on a website.
Absolutely.
If you watch this deep dive into RFK, you're going to see that it's not what it seems. And a man in his 60s who does what he did with this bear, that is not the behavior of actually, I wouldn't even say it's a person who's unwell. It's just a person who's lived so deep in privilege for his entire life that his money and his name has been able to get him out of so much trouble.
Yes.
That the things that he finds amusing and entertaining are nothing of what the common person does. And the fact that he thinks he can speak for the common person is woofully mistaken, in my opinion.
Well, and now they're saying that, I mean, and the statute of limitations has run out, and this certainly wouldn't be a felony.
Yeah.
But there were police resources that were spent on this after this curse caused a stir in New York City because there aren't bears in Central Park.
Nope.
So, yeah. All right. Just a little update on Bob Kennedy Jr.
Do your research, people.
Do your research. All right. Thank you very much, Greg and Jessica and all of our engineers. Without you guys, absolutely nothing works. Thank you most of all for calling and texting and listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. News is coming up next, followed by Todd Alba from noon to 2, Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4 p.m. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.